With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Organic growers seek to make voice heard in the 2023 Farm Bill. As Congress hammers out the 2023 Farm Bill, growing interest in the impacts of agriculture on climate could give organic farmers more political sway as they advocate for funding and programs that help them. Organic farmers have long sought recognition for their role in mitigating climate change, saying their practices promote conservation and help improve soil that store carbon. They say expanding technical and financial assistance would help them further implement activities that could build resilient landscapes. But many say they feel largely left out on the omnibus legislation. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report. And now let's get into today's show headlines. The National Farmers Union to host an annual fly-in. The National's Farmer Union will host its annual member fly-in September 11th through the 13th in Washington, D.C. It's more important than ever that producers talk directly with lawmakers. That's according to National Farmers Union Vice President of Advocacy, Mike Stranz.
We'll have hundreds of meetings with congressional offices, with either the elected officials or their staff. We'll hear from senior officials at USDA, probably including Secretary Vilsack, along with some important agency meetings with other federal executive branch offices. And it'll also be a chance to have a lot of farmers from around the country get together and realize and talk about the issues that are all the same. You might have a different sort of operation, different scale, different crops, different methods. But at the crux of it all, we all face some of the same challenges about changing climate, uncertain markets, and increased corporate consolidation in agriculture. So it's always a good event to bring farmers union members together to get the word out about our priorities.
In addition, with this being a farm bill year, it's even more important for agriculture to speak up. And Stranz says that the timing is especially good.
Congress in this year so far hasn't had an opportunity or hasn't really taken on bipartisan solutions to much yet. And I think given the divided state of government right now with the Republican-controlled House and a Democratic Senate, we need to show Congress that there is a way to get things done that will work for family farmers and ranchers as well as the people around the country when it comes to our farm and food system. So really hope people can turn out, speak up, and be heard during this upcoming fly-in.
He expects about 300 producers from across the country to take part in the fly-in coming up next month. NAFB contributed to that report. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
The deadline to apply for the Dairy Plus program is quickly approaching. The California Department of Food and Agriculture will be accepting applications through 5 p.m. on August 28th. Dairy Plus program funds are the first of their kind to be offered to California dairy producers through CDFA's Office of Environmental Farming and Innovation. The program will make approximately $75 million available in USDA Climate Smart Commodities funding, plus additional funds from CDFA. The program awards competitive grants to California dairy farms for the implementation of advanced manure management practices that reduce both methane emissions and nutrient surplus. Recordings of informational workshops covering eligible practices and the application process are available online. Applications for the Dairy Plus program can be found through the California Grants online portal. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. and you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, things are heating up over the EATS Act. Supporters of the bill say the Ending Agricultural Trade Suppression Act would prevent states from regulating farmers and ranchers nationwide. Mary Thomas Hart is the chief counsel with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
The EATS Act does two things. First, it prohibits the state, like California, from passing a law that would impact production practices in other states. And then in the event that a state does kind of get away with passing a law like that, it gives a farmer in another state a cause of action. So if you're a farmer in Iowa who has to spend a lot of money to comply with new California regulations, you can get some relief from the state of California under the EATS Act.
But opponents turned up the fire this week when a bipartisan group of more than 150 lawmakers sent a letter to the House Agriculture Committee Chair G.T. Thompson and Ranking Member David Scott. The letter states, quote, "The EATS Act goes beyond overturning Proposition 12 to threaten many other state laws." Marty Irby is the president of Competitive Market Action and board secretary at the Organization for Competitive Markets.
Is really a huge threat to independent family farmers. It's a giveaway to China and a giveaway to industrial agriculture from our view and the farmers and producers that we have at the Organization for Competitive Markets and Competitive Markets Action. We have pork producers, beef producers, egg producers, and dairy producers, and poultry producers, and all of these sectors in our membership are against this measure because it is so broad and so overreaching that it would nullify countless state laws related to agriculture, especially in the sustainable agriculture space and areas like organics where we have seen new markets emerge.
Hart disagrees.
But I think that the EATS Act is that necessary first step that we have to take, because it's important to remember that the issues created by the Prop 12 decision, by the NPPC decision, are much, much broader than agricultural production. But the EATS Act, I think, you know, for us, it makes ag a priority. It provides some initial relief for agricultural producers. And then I think it gives us the opportunity to further consider potential solutions for the broader economy, because it's not just agricultural production that is impacted by one state with a large economy being able to dictate national policy. That impact really is economy-wide.
Opponents to the EATS Act also claim it would benefit Chinese interests. Hart says that's not so.
I don't see it. I think that the teams that crafted the EATS Act, the staff that worked to draft that bill, had that in mind from the get-go, and the language of the bill states very clearly that this is only meant to provide a benefit to domestic agricultural producers. So it doesn't in any way create a cause of action for, you know, the Chinese government to sue the state of California.
But Irby says,
most people don't realize that the Chinese own 100% of Smithfield. Smithfield is obviously the largest pork producer in the world, and they own roughly one out of every five or one out of every six pigs in the United States of America. So we're producing a lot of this pork to go to China. And we're seeing a lot of these 26-story hog hotels, as I call them, pop up across the landscape in China. And they are terrible not only for animals and the environment, but also for public health and safety as well. So we don't want to see those type of operations pop up around in the United States, because the laws that would be nullified by the EATS Act in many instances are laws that would prevent certain types of structures like those operations that are in China, the 26-story hog hotels, from being built in states in the United States.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, USDA has released their August numbers for milk and meat production along with new price forecast. Rod Bain runs through the latest numbers.
Slight changes down are reported for most milk production categories in both forecast years. According to USDA's latest outlook and World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski,
we lowered our milk production forecast this month by 400 million pounds for 2023. That reflects lower cow numbers and lower milk per cow, in part due to heat stress reducing productivity. And then into 2024, we also reduced our milk production forecast there by 100 million pounds, reflecting lower cow numbers.
Meanwhile, prices are up in all categories of milk product and class, except for dry whey, which is down both years.
The all milk price for 2023 currently have it at $19.95 per hundredweight. That's up 40 cents per hundredweight this month from where we were in July. And for 2024, we're forecasting $19.35 per hundredweight. That's down 60 cents year over year.
News of note from USDA's August outlook for U.S. meat production. Jekinowski starts with lower production for major meats in 2023.
We reduced our beef production forecast by 180 million pounds, mainly reflecting slower pace of slaughter and lighter carcass weights. Reduced our current year pork production forecast by 110 million pounds, primarily reflecting lighter carcass weights. We reduced our broiler production forecast by 350 million pounds.
Due to lower broiler prices and higher feed cost, the downtrend of broiler production is expected to continue in 2024. However, for beef,
we raised our beef production forecast by 470 million pounds, reflecting the cattle report was implying a higher calf crop, and also raised our placements in the second half of 2023 and into next year, suggesting a little bit more abundant supplies for slaughter.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. And World Agricultural Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jekinowski discusses some of the adjustments to livestock price projections that was made by USDA this month.
Steer prices remain strong and they continue to increase. We raised our steer price forecast by $3.25 per pound for 2023 and by $2 per pound in 2024. Hog prices, we adjusted our forecasts to reflect what has been a pretty strong run in prices recently. Prices have been strengthening, reflecting strong demand, especially strong demand for the belly primal. So we raised our hog price forecast by $4.25 per hundredweight for 2023, and we made no change to our 2024 hog price forecast, which currently remains at $64.75 per hundredweight. Broilers down for 2023, we lowered it 6.3 cents per pound, and for 2024, we reduced it 7.5 cents per pound.
Again, that was World Ag Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jekinowski. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
As harvest begins, the American Seed Trade Association reminds farmers to be diligent in taking the proper precautions to ensure treated seed does not enter the domestic or export grain supply. When properly handled, seed treatments are an effective agronomic tool that provides seeds the necessary protection for a strong, healthy start. Completely remove all treated seed left in containers and equipment used to handle harvested grain and dispose of it properly. Always be careful to follow state and federal guidelines for proper handling, storage, and disposal of treated seed. For more information, visit seed-treatment-guide.com or contact your seed dealer.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
What state is the leader in peach production? The answer may surprise you. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. While Georgia is on many consumers' minds when it comes to fresh, juicy peaches, California is by far the largest peach-producing state in the United States. USDA's Economic Research Service reports that last year, California's harvest yielded 475,000 tons of fruit, with South Carolina a distant second at 67,400 tons, and Georgia in third place with a production at 24,800 tons. California has been the leading producer of Freestone peaches for the fresh market and Clingstone peaches for processing. However, the state's peach production has been trending lower for almost two decades, contributing to an overall drop in U.S. peach production. Total production in the United States in 2022 was estimated at 625,680 tons, which is 8% smaller than the crop in 2019. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. Most states have some form of sales tax exemption for ag-related purchases by farmers. The exemption generally involves equipment, inputs, and replacement parts, but each state's exemption is different. Unfortunately, the statutes tend to be confusing and the implementing regulations are often limiting. Are the purchases of items that you use on the farm exempt from sales tax? Generally, purchases of new and used farm equipment are exempt, but it will depend on the particular state exemption statute. Often the item purchased must be used directly in the production of agricultural commodities or livestock. This means that the purchase of an ATV, UTV, or excavator are not exempt because crop scouting, fixing fence, mowing, or making improvements to waterways don't directly involve production activities. Also, consumable supplies are probably not exempt either. They aren't repair or replacement parts. Make sure you complete an ag exemption certificate. In most states, you'll have to provide the certificate at the time of purchase to certify your intended use of the product and your status as an exempt farmer. The implementer input dealer will likely request it, and you'll need the documentation to avoid potential trouble for yourself or the vendor. Sales tax is complicated, and state exemptions vary in nature and type. Make sure to stay up to date on what your state law requires and provide the necessary documentation to your suppliers. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
August is when USDA and its National Agricultural Statistics Service takes a first look at most fall harvested fruit crops and their projected production for the season. What do the numbers indicate for the 2023 crops? Lance Honig of USDA NAS starts with apples.
9.9 billion pounds, that's up 1.5% from what was produced last year. Washington's up 9%. New York's down 19%. Michigan's down 15%. So the tale of two sides of the country. Washington, largest producer, pushing us overall above last year.
Cranberry production, meanwhile, is down over 5% from the previous year.
Our friends in Wisconsin looking at their fifth lowest production on record, and we're also down in Massachusetts this year.
Those states and their cranberry crops impacted by early season freezes and snows, as well as frost and hail during the growing season. Turning to grapes.
Up 6.1% year over year. That's actually our first year-to-year increase since 2018.
With California wide grape production up 12% year over year. Meanwhile, for this year's Golden State peach crop,
California, a little too much rainfall, believe it or not. Cooler than normal temperatures, that's not great for the crop.
Leading to a 7% reduction in total peach production, while in the southeast,
both South Carolina and Georgia dealt with some freeze situations,
resulting in production reductions of 66% in South Carolina and 78% in Georgia. The result for U.S. peach production this year?
Peach production expected to be off 13.2%. That's the lowest production in more than 15 years.
Finally, pear production forecasts for 2023 indicate a total of
645,000 tons. That is up just slightly from last season, but it would still be the second lowest production since 2007.
California is expected to have its highest producing pear crop since 2017. However, the nation's two largest pear-growing states, Washington and Oregon, are expecting later than normal harvest due to various weather and disease conditions during the growing season. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
The Pro Farmer Crop Tour concludes tonight, and 2.5 month highs in the dollar adds pressure to all commodities. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report brought to you by Helena. Pro Farmer Tour winds up tonight as East meets West in Rochester, Minnesota. Final numbers released tomorrow. Nearly every state has reported wide swings in corn conditions, but bottom line analysts say preliminary results show that USDA's 175 national corn yield may be on target. Pod counts mostly encouraging for soybeans. With extreme heat abating this weekend, we see more selling ahead for corn and beans. Selling looks more less likely in the wheat trade. December corn, we think, can test the 465 level next week. November soybeans around 13, 1305. Kansas City December wheat now looks solid below 738 to 740 level. This is the Bottom Line Report. Despite some fundamental negative signals, the dollar continues king among other world currencies, reaching 2.5 month highs and looking to add value. That's certainly slowing grain and livestock exports. That's our bottom line. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
And in more agriculture news, a company named Bored Cow is marketing an animal-free dairy milk. The National Milk Producers Federation isn't happy about it. Chad Smith has more.
Clay Detlefson, Senior Vice President and Staff Counsel with NMPF, says the organization wrote a letter to the Food and Drug Administration about the fake milk product.
Well, National Milk has been at odds with the Food and Drug Administration for literally four decades over FDA's lack of enforcement of labeling requirements. In particular, we've been fighting with FDA for their not enforcing the standards of identity for dairy. And we actually saw an announcement that Sprouts Market was going to be carrying Bored Cow in its grocery stores. And we see that what they're doing is taking one whey protein that's synthetically made by precision fermentation, concocting that with a myriad of other food ingredients, which are pretty disgusting sounding in many cases, and calling the product dairy milk.
He says FDA needs to knock off this nonsense and nip this in the bud. Milk cannot be created in a lab.
Milk has got 13 essential nutrients. It's got 400 different fatty acids. It's got two categories of proteins, casein and whey, numerous micronutrients. And it's an incredibly complex matrix that delivers an enormous nutritional package for consumers. And you cannot replicate that in a laboratory or elsewhere. I mean, milk is milk. It's natural and it's good for you. And you can't duplicate that in a lab.
The lab-based milk situation is similar to the plant-based milks.
It's the same in that people are taking liberties with existing rules and regulations and largely ignoring them and doing whatever they want. Sloppy marketing, if you will. Lazy marketing. It's different in this case because whereas the plant-based people were trying to distinguish themselves from dairy milk, these synthetic people are trying to say that they are in fact dairy milk, which, as I told you before, couldn't be further from the truth.
Detlefson talks about what steps National Milk wants the FDA to take.
Enforce its rules and regulations, send a clear message to the plant-based folks and the synthetic-based folks that the rules are on the books. They, like everyone else, have to follow them. If they don't like them, then they can petition the government to have them changed. But until they're changed, everybody needs to abide by these rules and regulations.
He says they're optimistic the FDA will take a look into the issue that NMPF identified in their complaint. Again, that's Clay Detlefson of the National Milk Producers Federation. Chad Smith reporting.
Another step in the battle with Mexico over corn. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, under procedures within the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, has established a dispute resolution panel regarding Mexico's biotech corn bans.
The U.S. believes this is a violation to the sanitary standards provisions of the USMCA.
The issue revolves around Mexican decrees against U.S. corn products produced with biotechnology. Dave Samuelson, American Farm Bureau Federation Senior Government Affairs Director, explains.
recent decrees earlier in 2023 said that they were going to move ahead to stop the import of white corn, but would allow the imports of U.S. yellow corn until they could find some alternatives. The U.S. has objected to these decrees all along, saying that they're not scientifically based, and has been talking with the Mexican government all along, but especially ramped up the discussions last year.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This funding that we're announcing today is part of an unprecedented $90 billion investment in America's high-speed internet infrastructure in order to ensure that we deliver internet for all.
From the most populated urban centers to the most remote rural areas.
White House Infrastructure Coordinator Mitch Landrieu and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announcing another investment in USDA's ReConnect program designed to bring high-speed internet to rural areas. Vilsack says this latest investment in the ReConnect program totals $667 million for projects in 22 states, and he told reporters,
"All told, during this administration, we've invested $3.1 billion in 179 ReConnect projects, which will touch and improve opportunities for over 430,000 Americans who live in rural America."
These ReConnect program loans and grants will help local communications companies deliver high-speed internet service to places where it really would not be cost-effective to do so without some kind of federal help. Mitch Landrieu gave us an example of the kind of projects being undertaken.
In Minnesota, the Lismore Cooperative Telephone Company is going to receive a grant loan combination to build a fiber-to-home network in Nobles County. That network is going to provide high-speed internet to nearly 4,000 people, 679 farms, and it's going to enable farmers in the Nobles County area to engage in precision agriculture and make their work more sustainable.
So that's just one project among hundreds taking place in rural areas to make sure service is available everywhere.
And now we're also making sure that as we expand access to high-speed internet, we're making it affordable for families and communities they serve by ensuring that every recipient of the grant funding participates in what's called the Affordable Connectivity Program, which can provide $30 off on monthly internet bills and up to $75 on qualifying tribal lands.
Ag Secretary Vilsack says farmers absolutely need high-speed internet to use precision agricultural technology and to produce and market climate-smart food products. But farms are not the only rural businesses that need high-speed connections. Without them, those businesses lose out on things like
the ability to market, the ability to get the message out, the ability to advertise is somewhat dependent on their ability to fully utilize the capacity of high-speed internet.
Plus, of course, for families, high-speed internet enhances educational opportunities, improves access to health care, and so much more. And Mitch Landrieu says the president's vision is internet for all, and that's the goal.
When you put it all together, and all is said and done, rural, urban, suburban, we will have total connectivity across the country.
Which Tom Vilsack says is what he calls
an historic opportunity and a transformational opportunity in rural America.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com. We're joined by Almond Board Marketing Director for North America and China, Laura Maureen, to talk about a recent announcement about a new marketing campaign being launched. And so, Laura, let's just start there with what this new campaign and partnership is all about.
Well, we are so excited to announce this new partnership. It's honestly the biggest campaign that the Almond Board has ever taken a part in. And we are partnering with the one and only Hall of Fame athlete, Deion Sanders, Coach Prime himself, in our new campaign, which is going to be called Own Your Prime.
Well, very cool. And as part of this, you've got a name to the campaign. It sounds like it's going to be pretty interesting and exciting. But as part of this, I understand there's going to be some research findings kind of tied into this about almonds and exercise recovery, which kind of seems right up the alley of, an athlete like Deion Sanders.
Exactly. That's exactly why we landed on choosing Coach Prime Deion Sanders as being the spokesperson for this. So we have some really great new research that came out from our nutrition research team. And what it is it's all around almonds and exercise recovery. And this is actually conducted through Appalachian State University. And the Dr. Neiman, the scientist that performed this, he's really well renowned in the field of exercise science. And he was so excited about these findings. And what it really shows is that if you have a daily habit of almond consumption, that it helps you with your exercise recovery, ultimately helping you kind of maintain your fitness and continue that on for longer. So we were so excited about these new findings around almonds. We wanted to find a way to bring them to life in a really memorable breakthrough way. And that's why we thought of Deion Sanders. You know, if you think about someone that has stayed in their prime and really kind of, you know, repositioned themselves and stayed relevant to the world for over 30 years, Deion has done that. So we thought if there's anyone that knows about recovery and staying in their prime, it's Deion Sanders. And so that's why we wanted to partner with Deion to bring this really exciting exercise research to life.
Yeah, it sounds like a neat tie-in there and absolutely related to one another. And, looking at the fall ahead, that means that, football season is upon us, which seems like great timing. When does this campaign really launch and get going?
Yeah, it's we're trying to line up perfectly with the start of the college football season. So, you know, obviously, Coach Prime he's kind of in the big leagues now. He is the head coach for the University of Colorado, and there is so much media buzz about this new position for him. And if he's able to take the Buffs, who were 1-11 last year, and turn that around. So we want to really capitalize on the excitement around Coach Deion and this new position for him. So we're actually going to be launching our advertising on August 30th, next Wednesday. And the first big spot will run in the first game that CU plays in, which is CU versus TCU on Saturday, September 2nd. It's going to be aired nationally on Fox. This is going to be their big game that they're featuring that day. And our ad is going to air nationally within that. So we're really excited about this premium placement and being able to launch our campaign in such an exciting way.
Very cool. And, I know that the Almond Board is no stranger to innovative kind of marketing approaches to get almonds out there. A lot of work done on the international front and getting into some of those important international markets. But this one seems like it's a big push, here domestically.
Yes, this is, we really wanted to take a step back and look at our domestic program to see what we could do to reinfuse some excitement and some boldness into almonds. You know, it's no surprise that the almond industry has been facing some pretty big headwinds the last couple of years. And we wanted to bring forward a message that would really help break through all of that competitive clutter and get people to stop and really notice almonds. So that's what the intent of the Own Your Prime campaign is really meant to do. It's to break through, leverage the energy and the vibrancy of Coach Prime and bring that new information around the exercise research findings of almonds to life. So we're going to be trying to appeal to a really broad audience here. You know, Coach Prime has very wide appeal. So does the idea of exercise and sports. And so our intent is to reach a really broad audience with this message, but hopefully come through in a way that's really bold, really breakthrough, and that people will notice and take attention to. I would also say that this is going to be a fully integrated campaign. So while we're launching with the start of the college football season, this campaign is going to run for a full 9 months. And it's going to be live on television, through social media, on connected TV, through digital platforms. And we're going to have a really robust public relations program. Something else we're testing for the first time that we're really excited about is doing some in-store signage. So having our message closer to the point of purchase, and that's going to be happening in stores all throughout California. So hopefully a lot of your listeners will actually see Coach Prime in their grocery store when they're shopping and in the nut aisle.
Well, very cool. And you kind of answered most of it. But for anyone that, you know, wants to see what this campaign is about, or maybe some of the highlights of those nutritional facts, where can people go online to see some of those resources and to learn a little bit more about this campaign?
So there's going to be a page on almonds.com that's specifically around the Own Your Prime campaign. And it will have all the information about the exercise research study, where you can see the ads. And then also, we will have a full press release available at almonds.com. So the website will be your go-to source for everything around the campaign. And you can also check our social media channels. We'll be providing regular updates there. And we'll also be providing updates on when you can see our ads airing in some of these big national college football games. And some really great lineups we have, especially some good California teams, so everyone can get excited.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
If your soil could talk, what would it say? If it's healthy, it may already be saying some good things about your future. Because farmers who use soil health building systems that include no-till, cover crops, and diverse species and rotations report greater productivity, profitability, and resiliency to weather extremes. Learn more about what your soil is saying about its health and your future. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. The CDFA is seeking input for a regulatory study on food safety. A study evaluating safety and water quality regulations is currently being conducted, and the California Department of Food and Agriculture is seeking stakeholder input. The study is being conducted in partnership with Crow LLP and the State Water Resources Control Board. It's part of an effort to streamline administrative processes, as well as optimize the information that's been collected by the state. The study will evaluate five key regulatory programs, including the Produce Safety Program, the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, the Dairy Confined Animals Facilities Program, Stormwater Industry General Permit Program, and State and Regional Winery Programs. If you would like to submit a confidential comment or to schedule a listening session, you can email regulatoryalignmentstudy.crow.com.
An initiative from UC Agriculture and Natural Resources, known as the Vine, is accepting applications for the Validation of Innovation Program. Made possible with support from a UC Climate Action Grant, the Vine Validation of Innovation Program aims to support innovation in the agritech sector, particularly in climate-resilient solutions for California food systems. The program's inviting startups to apply with a focus on providing comprehensive support for field trials. Startups interested in joining the Vine VIP can apply until September 16th. Chief Innovation Officer with UCANR and founder of The Vine, Gabe Yahtzee, said the program is designed to provide a supportive environment for carrying out essential tests and bridging the gap between innovative concepts and real-world application. Detailed information about the program and the application process is available at thevine.io/VIP. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Hillary's beneficial impacts to Western locals. The tropical system that traveled through the western U.S. earlier this week not only caused concerns, but also produced beneficial conditions for parts of the region. Here's USDA's Rod Bain with the report.
Heavy rains and flash flooding among some of the reported impacts of the former tropical system known as Hillary as it made its northward trek through the western U.S. earlier this week. Yet USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey notes some of the positives from that system.
This rainfall across the West does help with the replenishment of soil moisture at a time when we're typically quite dry, except in the monsoon areas of the Southwest.
Especially as the Western U.S. continues its recovery from long-term drought. One example of Hillary's beneficial impacts: improved reservoir levels at Lake Mead on the Colorado River.
That system reached an all-time record low since it was impounded back in 2022. We did get a very small bump related to Hurricane Hillary. There's still some water running through some of the tributaries that will likely make it to the lake eventually.
Yet Rippey adds greater improvement to Lake Mead's water levels were due to an above-normal winter wet season in the West.
Rippey goes on to discuss how a wet winter season has led to a rebound in water levels on Lake Mead on the Colorado River after that reservoir reached record low levels last summer.
Back in 2022, the surface elevation of Lake Mead dropped below 1,041 feet above sea level. That is more than 180 feet below what is considered a full lake. And as a result, the famous bathtub ring of mineral deposits on the side of the lake have become synonymous with the drought in the southwestern United States. Now, since that time in the mid to late part of 2022, when we hit those all-time record lows, we have seen some modest recovery. Now, a lot of that recovery is actually due to the extremely wet winter that we experienced last winter in 2022-23 across not just the Southwest, but really the entire western United States. That alone has boosted the lake's level by more than 20 feet, so that we're looking at the lake level, we see that that level has increased to nearly 1,064 feet above sea level. So immediately there, you can see that we've gained more than 20 feet on the lake elevation, just primarily due to the wet winter.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.